This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
True crime fans will love Crime House True Crime Stories, a Crime House original podcast. Every Monday, you'll experience the most notorious true crime cases from that week in history, all linked by a common theme, from serial killers to disappearances to unsolved murders and so much more. Follow and listen to Crime House True Crime Stories, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Crime House Studios, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
All right, good morning to you on this Friday morning. Happy you're back with us here. Mark Cox in the chair this morning, along with Kim St. Ange and Carl Middleman, Sue Thomas with your traffic, and of course, we're getting you back and forth to work. Wow, 4 degrees this morning when I got in the car, and it's going to be 60 on Monday. What a roller coaster. No doubt about that. At least the snow will be gone. And you got a couple of nice days to look forward to here at the end of February, which, before we get into March.
Which I am very much looking forward to because I'm also off on Monday and Tuesday.
Yes.
And when I return, it will be raining.
There you have it. Well, you got a couple. That's good. You'll have some decent weather days and won't be trapped in the house. So that'll be a good thing.
I'll definitely try to get outside.
Get out and get the stink blown off of you, as my grandmother used to say.
I like that.
Yeah, it's true. Well, Carl's looking at me like, why would you say that?
It's an interesting phrase.
Well, he's trying to say we don't shower enough
in the house all the time. You know what she's suggesting there. Get outside, get the stink blown off of you. We need that. Now, this morning on my way in, if you're just joining us here, I read this story yesterday. I've identified the woman who froze to death outside of St. Louis City Hall there, Clark Avenue, as Jennifer Pendleton. Pronounced dead Tuesday morning, according to the city's Office of Medical Examiner. No foul play suspected. They haven't pronounced a cause of death yet, but she was sleeping outside in single-digit temperatures. This morning as I drove in, I drove around down Clark Street and around City Hall and took pictures of three other individuals sleeping outside on sewer grates this morning. You could see the steam coming up out of the grate. I assume that was their only source of warmth, and they had blankets over top of them. You can see the pictures. I put them up on the Facebook page.
Their feet were kind of hanging out.
Oh, I know.
I mean, it's not like you can get used to that. Like, if you sleep out in, single-digit temperatures enough time, then your body just gets used to it. I can't imagine that's a thing.
You're going to get frostbite,
right,
at the very least. But the question was raised by Elliot Davis, who used to obviously to work at Channel 2, on social media this week. He's been urging the city to provide a warming bus for the people who absolutely positively will not go into a shelter for any reason. You might at least be able to save their lives by putting a bus down there. Lord knows we have plenty of extra buses. And let people crawl on board it. And that was nowhere to be seen this morning, and these people were sleeping outside. We're going to get Elliot on in the next hour. He's going to join me at about 8:20 this morning in about an hour to talk about his efforts, what he's heard from Mayor Tashara Jones' office on this and what he thinks about the pictures I captured this morning. There was no news media around, nobody out there drawing attention to their plight. And, I was on my way to work. I had to be here to get on the show, on the air by 5 o'clock. So I we'll do what we can here, right? I think there's something could be done about that, it seems like, particularly given what happened 2 days ago with the woman dying, probably because of those cold temperatures. Maybe not. Maybe they'll find some other cause of death, but I think that's just awful. Coming up, we'll get to Jim Carafano. Bottom of the hour, Congressman Mike Boss is going to join us, and he is, of course, in the Congress from Illinois there in District 12, and we're going to talk more about what's going on in D.C. The Senate stayed up all night. And they voted on budget bills, which then will take some form and be sent to the House. A lot of people are already saying it raises taxes instead of or raises spending instead of lowering it. And I don't know how that's going to fly in the House. We'll talk to the congressman at the bottom of the hour. But right now, let's get to our top stories.
The Mark Cox Shortlist.
Remember me, Cori Bush, as a member of Congress? I fought for the people, but baby, I'm still here, and I'm not alone.
Oh, she's back. Cori Bush is announcing her newest venture up in Washington, D.C., where apparently she still lives. That's where she filmed the promo for her new show that's about to hit the air.
We stand outside the building that Mr. Patel on one day plans to, quote, shut down and reopen the next day as a museum of the deep state.
The only thing that would make that story better, Dick Durbin, is if they hired you as the greeter inside the door of the then empty Hoover building. Let's hope. He was talking about Kash Patel, who's now been confirmed as director of the FBI.
We have to take back the Panama Canal because that wasn't the deal. It's also the most profitable thing ever built. You know, it's what you hear about casinos and you hear about all the stuff. They're peanuts compared to this.
Yeah, that was President Trump at the Republican governor's dinner. He met with a bunch of them yesterday talking about the Panama Canal and whether or not the U.S. should exercise the words in the treaty that would allow us to take back control of that canal.
This is the chainsaw for bureaucracy. Chainsaw!
I knew that was going to be the lead video this morning on the network news the minute I saw it. If you saw this yesterday, that was Elon Musk at CPAC. And the president of Argentina, Milei, is that how you say his last name, came out on the stage and handed Elon Musk a very large inscribed chainsaw as evidence of his budget cutting.
So I did see this video.
Yes.
And him holding up with the chainsaw posing for the picture. But what did the chainsaw say on it?
I don't know. I couldn't read it in the video. The shot was too wide. I'm sure there are pictures of it out there somewhere. But you knew what was going to happen. Of course, Elon Musk is a unusual guy, right? He's admitted kind of being on the spectrum here a little bit, I think. And just like the Sig Heil that they claim he made, it's just another one. It's just another awkward way he expresses himself when he puts his hand on his chest and throws his hand up in a wave. Lots of politicians have done it. The left tried to claim his was some sort of Nazi salute, which is absolute stupidity. But when he was on stage up there at CPAC, he was talking about why he bought X. And I thought that Rob Schmidt, who was the host of this, brought out a very important point here that we should all remember. Listen, hold on, Carl. I've muted myself here, and I apologize for that. Listen to Elon Musk explain this.
Directly from the government.
The government wants to take over media.
Yeah, it's terrible.
Yeah, that's why we have X.
Yeah, and that's
why you spent $44 billion. I mean, that's a lot of money.
I mean,
more than it was probably worth. But it had there was a message.
Freedom is priceless.
Priceless. Yeah. Probably one of the most important investments this country's ever seen. If you got to protect the First Amendment, it's not much more important than that.
Yeah, I mean, I got a lot of criticism, and people said, "Well, that proves he's a huge idiot." From a he bought it for whatever $44 billion, and now it's worth like 8 cents. And
it's not worth 8 cents.
But the yeah, it was essentially to you know, yeah. Buy freedom of expression. Yeah.
Once that's gone.
Thank God for Elon Musk.
I think him buying Twitter was so key and really helped Donald Trump get reelected. He's saying it may have been worth not quite as much as he paid for it. Well, he's made some of that back because he's charging now for some of these, mm-hmm. you know, subscriptions and things like that that didn't used to be in effect. I mean, it was huge. The amount of censoring that was going on Twitter alone was ridiculous.
Remember when they tried to stop him? And here's the greatest thing about it. He spent $44 billion and didn't even notice. That's how much money.
What is
got.
That like when you're that rich?
If I
spend like $20 on it, that's why I don't gamble. If I lost more than $20, I would be sad.
Let's get to Jim Carafano coming up here. We'll get his take, obviously, on what's happened with Ukraine and Russia and the peace talks right after.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
To this.
You've been there for 3 years. You should have ended it 3 years. You should have never started it.
I like him personally. He's fine. But I don't care about personally. I care about getting the job done. You have leadership now that's allowed a war to go on that should have never even happened.
Yes, some of President Trump's comments, that got him in a little bit of heat this week, right, with people who felt he was not fair to Volodymyr Zelensky. And then we find out that there was more going on in the background than we knew, right? There had been negotiations with Rubio and others talking about some of the precious minerals that were in Ukraine, that are in Ukraine, and whether or not we should have access to those at some point as some sort of payback for all the money that we've sent over there. And apparently they originally agreed to that and then decided they were going to back out on the deal. And that is when Donald Trump kind of went sideways on him. Because if you've noticed a pattern here, it doesn't really matter if your name is Ted Cruz or Marco Rubio or you name them, Ron DeSantis. If you are an opponent of Donald Trump and you go head to head with him and you insult him somehow, he's going to attack you. Maybe it's a nickname like Little Marco or Rockin' Man or whatever the wording is. There's a pattern in how he conducts negotiations. And I think that's what you're seeing here. I don't think there's anything more to it than that, because already we see that Zelensky has backed off. This is a story from Breitbart yesterday. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said Thursday he had a productive meeting with retired Lieutenant General Keith Kellogg, who is the Donald Trump special envoy for Ukraine and Russia. And the upbeat meeting seemed to scale back a growing confrontation between Zelensky and Trump over bilateral U.S. peace negotiations with Russia. So Zelensky said, I had a productive meeting, a good discussion, many important details. I am grateful to the United States for all of the assistance and bipartisan support for Ukraine and the Ukrainian people. So it's important for us and for the entire free world that American strength is felt. So I think that basically he realized his mistake, Zelensky, in this particular case. I could be wrong about that.
I'm sure he's very much missing Joe Biden being in office when he would just get millions and millions of dollars in checks.
Kim, you said that wrong. It's billions and billions
of dollars. Sorry. Yes, please. I appreciate that correction because you're right. I mean, and we didn't know where the money was going, and somehow you were like a Ukraine hater if you said, hey, you know what? We would like some transparency on where that money is being going. Wow. Can I speak English? Where that money is going. There we go.
This is what J.D. Vance had to say about the whole thing, the peace talks, all of that, not just in Ukraine, but in Gaza. I'm sure he's referring to that as well. Go to cut 7 for us, Carl, please.
Peace is in the interest of the American people, and he's going to fight for it for the remainder of his administration. Wherever war breaks out, he's going to be the president of peace. Now, he, of course, is a very good negotiator, a very good businessman. He recognizes that a lot of these issues are tough. It's going to take a smart statesman to figure this stuff out, but we've got that in the White House, and I really believe that we're in the cusp of peace in Europe for the first time in 3 years because we have leadership from the Oval Office, and we haven't had it in 4 years in this country.
Yeah, he's very right about that. People who are engaged, which is Donald Trump, and whose goal is to get this thing over with.
Mm-hmm.
But people want to talk about the fact, well, you know, the president lied. He said he'd end this his first day in office, blah, blah, blah.
No one really expected that. I don't even know if Donald Trump really.
No.
He says that stuff. It's like the shock value of it.
But still, he will end up ending this. And,
yeah.
And the thing about it is there were no meetings, no nothing with Vladimir Putin over the 4 years of the Trump administration.
Which is stunning.
Or the
Biden
administration.
Putin said that in the interview with, was it Tucker Carlson?
Yeah.
Yeah, by the way, you think about how well-spoken J.D. Vance is, and I know it's only been a month into this new administration, but let's just assume he runs for president in 4 years. How many people would really challenge him? Because he's not this controversial guy like Donald Trump was, where people thought, oh, you know, there's enough hatred. There's a lot of love, but there's enough hatred for Donald Trump that maybe I could stand a chance. I don't think you will have other people as quick to want to challenge J.D. Vance. Now, I know I'm younger, but I think of like speeches I've heard from like JFK or Reagan and how well spoken they were. And I feel like the little bit that I've seen from J.D. Vance, he kind of reminds me of that. You know, he has this really, he's very effective with his words, and that resonates with a lot of people, I think.
They were both people you mentioned were great communicators. Mm-hmm. And I think you're right. I think Vance has that quality.
Yeah.
And he's got a way of speaking the truth, as Reagan did, to our allies, even when it's not an easy truth to hear, which he did in Germany last week and took a lot of grief for that. When he was over there, he was at CPAC yesterday talking about the fact that Germany's entire defense is subsidized by the American taxpayer. And yet they break down in tears when you tell them they should protect free speech. They don't want to hear it. We'll try to figure out what happened to Carafano. We were trying to get a hold of him. He's probably jet-setting around the world, maybe in a different time zone. And we missed him there. We'll see what we can do about that. Coming up at the bottom of the hour here, when we get back from the break, Congressman Mike Bost, he's been up there at the House, and they're going to be looking at this budget next. Are we spending too much money in the proposed budget? We'll get the congressman's take on it in the Capitol Beat. Stay tuned.
Capitol Beat.
All right, that time of the week when we welcome in our elected representatives up in D.C. Congressman Mike Bost joining us this morning, obviously from the 12th District over in Illinois. Great to have you back, sir. How are you?
Good to be on with you during this time of lightning speed of everything that's coming out of D.C.
It's hard to keep up with on this end. How about for you?
Well, you know, the real problem is you've got a president that's moving at the speed of sound. Unfortunately, Congress still moves at the speed of Congress.
Yes. Yeah, that's true. I understand your Senate colleagues stayed up all night doing a budget-a-rama, whatever that is, voting on a bunch of different budget ideas that they will eventually send to the House, and there's already complaints that it spends too much money.
Yep. That's why the House, as soon as we get back in, we've moved a bill out of committee already. that the president sent out a tweet the other day explaining how the House vote is so good and that he respects the Senate, but he wants to make sure the House vote gets moved, and we're going to move it on over as soon as we get back in there next week because it has less spending. It does the things that this president wants, and right now I think there was a really clear message from the voting public of this United States that they want him to take the lead, and because he took the lead on our bill, I think that's what we'll be moving over.
You know, maybe you can clear this up for me. I've watched DOGE identify what they say is wasteful spending and try to claw some of that back. But moving forward, isn't it just a matter of a Republican-controlled House and Senate not approving that same outlay moving forward? I mean, that's where the real savings comes in, right?
Sure, sure. And here's the danger in that. I want you to know that. And that's why reconciliation is so important.
Yeah.
We can do so many things in reconciliation because what it does is it removes the cloture amendment or the cloture vote in the Senate. And this is real wonky, but I'll try to explain it. So the House, a simple majority, except on a very, 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 very few things, rules. In the Senate, a simple majority rules after a cloture vote is made, which is 60 votes rather than 50 votes. Well, the Republicans have 53 votes, and therefore, if the Democrats want to block something, they can block it. So we have to make sure, because in the reconciliation, because it is a reconciliation, they are reconciling with the group who controls the budget, which is the House. That vote happens, and it only requires a simple majority in the Senate. So that's why we have to make sure that everything we put in that bill, when we send it over, is reconcilable, first off, and it meets the rules for the parliamentarian in the Senate. And then we can pass a lot of this stuff. Because remember, everything else from here on out, if we want to stop certain wasteful spending, if we want to do things that will make the economic engine run hotter in this United States and draw business back to this United States onshore like we did during the first time of President Trump, it can pass the House, but then what you're going to run into is that cloture rule in the Senate, and that's where the problem can occur.
Speaking of businesses coming back to you, then the United States, I know one of the ways Trump is trying to do that is with these tariffs that he's imposing on these other countries. You hear a lot of the left saying, you know, this is going to raise inflation, and maybe it would temporarily, but obviously Trump thinks that would be worth it in the long term. How do you see this playing out? Do you see that being an effective way to achieve that goal?
You bet. And let me tell you why. We have a negotiator in chief, which we didn't have for the last 4 years. The 4 years before that, it was amazing. A lot of things that happened. Matter of fact, if you'll remember the $3,500 jobs coming back to Granite City,
yes,
when they had all been laid off by the tariffs that were put in place through what was known as the 232 rule that the president knew and understand to use for national security to bring back our steel. You know, we have to make sure that we use tariffs wisely. Look, he's not joking about the fact that we keep getting ripped off. You know, that's also why the fact that I've got a bill that I'm passing, working right now, that's in the Ways and Means Committee called Fighting Trade Cheats Act. And basically it's directed at the Chinese Communist Party because every time you turn around, they cheat on our trade agreements. What tariffs do is that forces them to the table. And by doing it, when the president knows what's going on, he can negotiate those one by one or just make the threat of them. And if you'll notice, quite often, the threat of them can be used as a tool to drive someone to the bargaining table. And it can be used for a whole lot of things, maybe like returning hostages, or not hostages, maybe like making sure that you take back your illegal aliens. All of these things, sometimes the threat of a tariff is more effective than even the implementation of it.
Yeah, I'll bet. Congressman Mike Bost, our guest this morning. Hey, speaking of the steel plant over here at Granite City. What's the status of that? Do we see any of the president's efforts so far, maybe potentially leading to some jobs being brought back over here?
Well, here's the problem. The state of Illinois is the federal government is not the problem there. The state of Illinois is.
Wow.
Those jobs are moving to Arkansas. They are building another plant down there because when Illinois passed its rule that they did on energy that causes the energy prices to go up. Remember, one of the biggest costs for producing steel is the cost of energy. What they've done is they already had a plant in Arkansas. They expanded that plant in Arkansas. And unfortunately, after 125 to 130 years of having jobs in Granite City, why it was named Granite City, right? Those jobs, unfortunately, are moving to Arkansas.
Wow. I hate to hear that.
I wanted to get
so do I, because we worked so hard to get those jobs back. You know, remember, whenever I was first elected during the Obama administration is whenever we lost those jobs. And Trump came in, and within 6 months, we had those jobs back because of the tariffs were done. They came back to the United States. We thought, this is great, because they made the investment there. Unfortunately, you know, legislation has its consequences.
I wanted to get your thoughts, Congressman, on what you think the United States' role should be with this whole situation with Hamas, because they had agreed to give back the bodies of the mother and her children. And, you know, they return the bodies of the children, but it turns out it was not the mother's body. I don't even think at this point we know. Where do we go from here? How involved do you think the United States should be?
Here's where we go. If we've ever had a good situation to be in, you have a great leader in Israel, and you have a great leader in the United States. They know that if they create a deal, they'll stick with it. They're going to calculate the long-term risk. Anyone who thinks that Hamas is going to stick with a deal, Hamas is a terrorist group that's been around for a very, 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 very long time. And their influence from Iran is exactly what we're dealing with. So this is a bigger thing than Gaza, and it is the Middle East, and Iran is a culprit in this. So I want to, and I'm sure the President of the United States, and I know Benjamin Netanyahu and his people want, they want their bodies back. Yeah. They want the ones who are alive back as soon as possible. But Hamas, unfortunately, we think like the Westerners, okay? We value life. This is a group that doesn't value life. They put women and children on the front to use them as a wall between them and their fighting forces. This is not, you know, I mean, this has been going on thousands of years. You have to know your enemy to deal with them. I think that we're going to have to make some very, very tough decisions and explain once again and break the back of Hamas and drive them out. And that I wish that wasn't the case. Israel will do that.
I couldn't agree more on that. Congressman Mike Bost, our guest. Hey, one last question. I know you've been deeply involved in veterans issues over the years.
Well, I'm chairman of the Veterans Committee. That kind of puts it on.
It does, doesn't it? And I know you've talked about this. I've listened to all these complaints of people who are mad about cuts in DOGE. And a lot of them are claiming that it's going to have some negative impact on veterans and the VA. What's your take on that?
Let's put it in perspective. Actually, everybody's saying it's 1,000 people that were laid off. It's actually 1,600. It is the entire VA-wide, worldwide, not nasty. Most of them come out of D.C. that are laid off. They are not doctors, and they are not nurses. They're not frontline workers, unless those were already on the chopping block because of things they did.
Okay?
Now I want to put it in perspective. 371,000 employees is what VA has. The amount of people who are being let off is 0.02%. 0.02. We lose that in a couple weeks just from attrition. We're just simply saying the new hires, stop. Let's get this together. Let's look over the jobs and what needs to be done and what doesn't need to be done. We're not in any way, shape, or form, and trust me with this. The secretary is a very, very good friend of mine. He and I served together in Congress whenever I first came in. He was actually in my district the very first time I was running. But Doug Collins is a secretary, and we are both veterans. We're going to do everything to make sure that our veterans lose no services, that they can get their services where they want them, when they want them. But you know what? When you have the second largest bureaucracy in the world, guess what? There's waste, fraud, and abuse, and we're going to clean it out.
Love to hear it. Congressman Mike Bost, great having you on again, sir. Thank you.
Thank you for having me on.
Yes, sir. We'll talk again soon. Yeah, good. I knew he was. I forgot that he was chair of VA committee, but still, I knew it was near and dear to his heart. It sounds like they've got that well taken care of. And something you're not going to hear reported in the mainstream media. They'll find one vet somewhere who claims that he didn't get good care, and they'll claim that's because of DOGE. So I'm glad we were able to clear that up. Kim, what are we talking about this morning?
Well, if you're a sports fan, there's a chance that there's maybe a couple players you closely follow. Maybe they're the reason why you'd pay hundreds of dollars to attend a game.
Sure.
Well, a former NHL star is blasting the NBA for kind of being soft, allowing some of the star players to kind of say, you know what, I'm not going to play this game.
We'll talk about it when we come back. Stay tuned.
Kim on a whim.
How many people are actually still fans of the NBA?
Well, I guess you would have had to have. I mean, I was at one point years ago. I went to a number of NBA games, saw Michael Jordan play at Detroit, Bill Laimbeer, all those guys. There was a time when I was pretty into it. And I've lost interest over the years because they've just become a bunch of rich, spoiled brats. You know, it's they have the highest pay in the NBA of any professional sport.
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah.
So the NBA All-Star Game that was played last weekend was near all-time low for viewership. They had about 4.7 million people who turned in for that. It was the second least watched game in the event's history, a 13% drop in viewership from the year before. Now, you wonder, might, you know, attribute to that, that it could just be people in general have lost interest in it. But what I think also could have been a factor was the fact that just hours before the game, LeBron James, who is the biggest name arguably in the NBA, said, you know what, I have this lingering ankle and foot discomfort. I'm not going to play.
Who was that?
LeBron James.
That guy.
Sorry. And you think about the people who love the sport maybe because they love LeBron James. In fact, I think that that's why people because of him, would choose to follow a sport. I think that especially with social media and you can feel like you have this more personal side of a player, you follow the sport because you really connect to a player. So I think about these kids who convinced their parents to buy them tickets that were, you know, a couple thousand dollars, and then the star player's like, you know what, actually, I'm out. And P.K. Subban, who was in the NHL for about 10 years, I remember talking about him when I worked in Nashville because he previously played for the Nashville Predators. Man, he blasted the NBA for kind of being soft. He went on ESPN just saying, you know what, players who were paid millions of dollars, it's time to actually show up. Listen to this conversation he had.
If you're really about sports, then you're about two things, your teammates and the fans. And I'm sorry, it doesn't matter how much money you're making. When you do not show up to play, you're letting your teammates down.
Yes.
When you do not show up to play, you're letting the fans down that are paying you 40, 50, 60 million. I don't care if you're getting 300 million. Congratulations. But these people in here are paying $2,500 a ticket, $5,000, that are blue-collared, hard-working people. If you don't get your head wrapped around that, you shouldn't be in pro sports. Because how are we going to grow? How do we expect you to be an example? Well, guess what? You don't want to be? You are one. You're on the biggest stage. You just said it. They make the most money. You're an example. You got to show up. You got to take that on. I'm sick and tired of making athletes greats, all-time greats, that aren't the best examples. Those are the people that we want our kids to follow.
Thank you. Next thing we know, it's going to be LeBron James, who says he got a really bad paper cut.
LeBron James.
Yep, and he's going to say, I can't play, I have a really bad paper cut, and I need to go get a Moana Band-Aid from Walgreens, and I just simply cannot play in this game. I'm sorry.
LeBron James, he's a great player. He may be one of the greatest. See, I don't think he's the GOAT, but he's certainly one of the greatest. I think longevity has contributed to that. Had he retired 7 years ago like Jordan did, I mean, Jordan played college basketball for a couple years before he went pro. And with those extra years, he's broken a lot of Michael Jordan's records, and there's a lot of dispute about that. But at the end of the day, I'll never forget going to a Cardinals spring training game one time with my son, and all he cared about was that at the spring training games you could get right down by the field, mm-hmm. and he went down there. He was so excited, and of course it was a travel game, and not all the players there. Like Pujols was not there that day, but Duncan, the what was his name, Carl?
Which
the
pitcher?
Son? The
Dave Duncan.
Dave Duncan was the coach,
yeah.
His son, when he played for the Cardinals, that was a name we recognized. Brad's yelling at him, wanting an autograph, and the mm-hmm. guy just acted like the kids weren't even there. Mm. And I thought to myself, and I hear that
that's
that
spring training they're supposed to.
They're supposed to. And my son was so disappointed. And I understand that a lot of people know Duncan and knew him before he died, and that he really was a great guy. I never met him personally, but I do know my kid was very disappointed by that. And I think some of these athletes get a little too wrapped up in self-importance, mm-hmm. and I think that contributes to this. Mm-hmm. But of all people, the guy who personally considers himself the greatest of all time should realize that a lot of people probably bought tickets to that game,
right,
thinking they were going to get to see him play,
right,
and he decided that his pinky hurt at the last minute and he wasn't coming.
I understand injuries happen. You have to take care of your
yes.
body. Playing a sport like that, that would be very taxing on your body, but it comes to a point where it's like you need to play. And this is just an example of where I feel like the NBA, maybe they were the ones who said, okay, yeah, go ahead and back out. But
right.
I feel like they should have been like, no, you need to play. Unless you are really, really hurt, you need to play. It just seems like he had some ankle discomfort. You know how many people play with ankle discomfort?
Yeah. Wrap it. It wrapped.
Yeah, I mean, whether you like it or not, the kids do look up. Not even just kids. Adults look up to these athletes.
He's getting a little long in the tooth, so maybe those nagging injuries are getting to him. My son would say, yeah, but he still scored 45 points the other night in the game or whatever it was. It's true. He can still do that.
I don't
that.
Know. How old is he, by the way?
What is he, 43, 44?
LeBron James.
He's getting up there.
Hmm.
Let's put it that way. He's not Tom Brady's age just yet, but he's getting there. For sure. All right, coming up, two great stories for you. Number one, we're going to find out what's going on with the St. Louis Police Department being taken over by the state. Senator Nick Schroer in here at 8:35. And at 8:20, Elliot Davis, former Channel 2 reporter, he and I have been watching what's going on with the homeless lady who died downtown. An update coming up.
LeBron James.
Get more at 971talk.com.